Okay.
So for those who missed out, we'll have the recording here. And for everyone else that is on here, you can come back and look at this. We're just talking about composting, how you can make a real successful composting pile. So my dad, Edwin Deisinger, is just going to start sharing about how you can build a compost pile out of materials that you have or that you can get.
So the very basic ingredients, as Paul mentioned, are what we call greens and browns, just very simply. The browns are when we're doing compost, we're talking about a carbon nitrogen ratio. And so the browns are materials that are high in carbon. And like Paul said, straw is kind of the classic and probably the most preferred brown. But hay or dried grass clippings or any dried material, organic material, can be used as a brown. Wood chips and cardboard and sawdust are very, very high in carbon, and if you want stuff to break down fast, you might want to not use too much of that. But then we go to the greens, which are materials that are high in nitrogen. Grass clippings is probably the classic one there, but your kitchen scraps, you know, weeds that you take off your garden, you can put, if you put them straight on the compost heap before they've dried out, manure, cow manure, horse manure, all of these things are high in nitrogen, and so we would call them the green materials. So very simply, you can, if you have a good supply of browns and greens, you can make a compost pile in layers, putting down 2 or 3 inches of the brown and then 1 to 6 inches of green. Now, the proportion of brown to green is you need a lot more brown than green. So when I said 6 inches of green, I'm talking about material from your garden, maybe like your old tomato vines, you know, that's going to be taking up a lot of space. But if you're putting down green grass clippings, you just want to have an inch of green grass clippings on probably 3 inches of straw. So anyway, so you layer your brown and then your green, and then throw a little dirt on top to help inoculate the pile with soil organisms. And then go back to your straw again. Put another layer of straw, another layer of brown, green, a little dirt, brown, green, a little dirt. And you can do that up to 4 or 5 feet high. And then you've got a couple options. You can let that sit for about 6 months, and it'll just decompose by itself. As long as you, I should mention the dimensions. You don't want your pile to be wider than 4 to 6 feet. It needs to have access to air and moisture. If the center of the pile can't get air, then it won't decompose. So you don't want the pile wider than that. You can make the pile as long as you want. Some people make long windrows of compost piles, and that's fine. So you can have the option of just letting it sit for about 6 months, and it'll decompose over time. That's called cold composting. The other way you can do it, and I'll be honest, that's what we mainly do on the farm here. But the other way you can do it is called hot composting, and that requires a high level of management. Basically, after about the fourth day after you've made the pile, you'll start turning the pile every 2 days. And so, like I said, that's high management. You're going to a lot of effort to turn the pile every second day. But you'll have a very nice compost at the end of 14 to 18 days. Just a few other tips. If you're going to do the cold composting method, one way that works nice is to make kind of a bin out of straw bales. So you'd make your straw bales about, say, 5 feet wide, and you can make kind of a U-shape if you want, and keep making it as long as you want, like I said, but you have that, to use the straw bales to contain the compost, and the compost will decompose right out to the edge of the straw bales, which is nice, and eventually the straw bales will last for between 1 and 2 years, and their straw can become part of the compost even. So you have a nice system there. If you're going to be managing your pile closely and doing the hot composting, turning it every second day, you would want to, when you turn the pile, take all the outside layer off the pile and put that into the center of the new pile you're making, and then pile the inside on the outside of the new pile so that you're getting an even composting of all the material, because of course the outside material won't decompose like the inside will. So I think that's a brief summary on how to make a compost pile.
Yeah, that's great. And so, you know, then a question that kind of might come up is, you know, what do I do if I already have a compost pile that stinks and is mushy and is attracting flies and all of that? And so, you know, what you could do is, that's a great time to what we call remake your pile. Simply remake it. Just take your pile, maybe go get some straw, some brown, some dry ingredients, and rebuild it, starting out layering it like my dad was talking about there, and just rebuild it from the ground up. Or if your pile isn't doing anything, if it's just sitting there and it's not doing anything and it needs more moisture, you might need to be adding more greens, more nitrogen source, some more fresh stuff into it. Or you can jumpstart a dead pile by poking holes in it with a bar or a stick or something and pouring like a liquid fish emulsion, or you could pour in some molasses, something to give it a little jump start on its way to get those microorganisms working and breaking stuff down. And if you do use a liquid fish emulsion or a molasses, you can dilute it like a half a cup per 2 gallons of water. It's kind of a good dilution that you could put in. And then, you know, put it into your compost pile. It can help give it a little jump start if it's not going. And I think Dad touched on this a little bit. You know, an ideal size for your compost pile is going to be around 4 to 6 feet. 4 to 6 feet, you could either do it square, or you could do it at least within 4 to 6 feet wide, but you could do it long. You could do like a windrow going down wherever you are, and that works too. But you just don't want to get too much bigger. If you get too much wider than that, then you end up having to make holes in it or turn it or somehow to get air down inside it, because remember, you need the temperature, you need the air, you need the moisture, but you also need the air to be able to get down in it to keep those. It's an aerobic process that uses oxygen to break these down. And if it doesn't have air, then your anaerobic bacteria starts producing, and those aren't the ones that you really want to be going to make a good compost pile. So you definitely want to be able to have that air. And I'm trying to remember, Dad, did you talk about using straw bales to make your pile?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so just a quick review there. I guess you can make it out of straw bales on the sides, and that's just a great way to make your compost pile. And you know, the whole reason why we want such good quality compost, or when it's broken down, if you watch my video on the soil, remember it's called humus, and it's broken down to the point where it basically looks and feels and smells like good quality soil. It shouldn't be gross at all, and that just does so much for our gardens. If you remember, you know, it helps in aiding the soil structure, so your soil can actually end up holding more water. It gives a place for those microorganisms, the bacteria and the fungi, to grow in your soil, and those are so important for making nutrients available to your plants. You know, it's just been absolutely fascinating. I'm currently working in my online course. I'm currently working on the modules on the soil and building a healthier soil and talking about soil structure and fertility, and it's just amazing. This whole world of its own under our feet, this whole system that God has created right underneath us that we hardly even think about, and how beautiful it is balanced. And really, when it comes down to it, compost is the number one best soil balancer. You know, we can do soil tests, and soil tests are good. You know, I don't put them down. There's value in them. But if you're not in a place where you can get a soil test right away, or you don't know how to interpret a soil test or anything like that, you know, it can get pretty scientific. The good news is that compost is the best soil balancer. It'll bring up a low pH level. It'll bring down a high pH level. It balances out. You know, they found that having good humus in the soil, because it helps with fostering that microbial life, it also, if you have too much of one element or one nutrient or something, the microbes themselves combine that up to keep it from being detrimental to plants. And so it's just amazing, amazing things that happen in the soil. And it's incredible to learn more about it. So, you know, just again, some real quality reasons why you want to be starting your own compost pile, and you want to be able to have a compost pile. You know, it's best if you can have compost that is aged at least around a couple years. You know, if it's composted really fast, maybe a year, but if you have compost that's aged a couple years, that can just be a huge benefit. Or if you know of a place where you can get worm castings are incredibly beneficial as well. But jumping back to compost, another thing to mention, and that is that, and Dad, did you touch on this? I don't remember if you touched on this either, where, you know, the difference between the breakdown of a regular compost pile versus leaves.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, so, you know, in a regular compost pile, you have your browns and your greens, like we were just talking about. And for those that have just jumped on the call, we're talking about composting, how to do it successfully. And we were just sharing about how you have browns like your straw and greens like your fresh, you know, kitchen scraps. And you want to have a layer of them, mixture of them, to keep it from becoming an icky, gooey mess. And so the decomposition process that happens in a compost pile like that is done bacterially. So it's a bacterial process where bacteria is breaking down the organic matter and making it into compost. On the other hand, when it comes to leaves and like leaf piles, and especially in the fall now when you're gathering a whole bunch of leaves and you might be thinking, well, this is great, I'll just throw these on my compost pile. They do compost, you know, they do break down, and they're very beneficial for the garden. The compost that you can get off of leaves is wonderful for your garden, but they do break down with a fungal breakdown process. And so it is a different process, and you might not want to mix the two. You might want to keep your leaf pile as its own little fungal breaking down process on one side, and your compost pile with your other kitchen scraps and stuff on another side. But, and then just going back to how, you know,
I just mentioned, Paul, it seems that anything from the woods, you know, if you are going to try to break down sawdust or wood chips or leaves or anything like that, it seems like it is more of a fungal process that breaks those things down, whereas anything from the field, like grass and hay and straw, those kinds of things have a more microbial breakdown process. So you can think of fields and woods to kind of distinguish between the bacterial and the fungal breakdown of the materials, where the material came from originally, kind of gives you an idea which process will break it down.
Yeah, great point there. Yeah, and all of that coming back to building up the health of our soil, you know, that's the foundation of our garden, and that's what, when you have a healthy soil that is full of that microbial life, it allows the nutrients to be made available to your plants to give us the veggies that we want that are so crisp and beautiful and lush and that just taste way, way better than anything that you find out of pretty much most all of the grocery stores. So much better. And then plus you have that hard work behind it, and so it's so satisfying to eat from the labor of your own hands. And, you know, I'm, like I kind of mentioned, I'm currently going through building these modules in my online gardening course, which is really exciting, learning more. And just a little reminder here that I'm going to be closing down registration for that for anyone that wants to jump in here. I'm going to be closing it down sometime this next week. And so make sure to jump in on that quick. It's borntogrow.net/enroll. And before, you know, I really want to hear from you all. I want to hear your questions, hear about your garden, any questions that you have, either about what we talked about here about composting or about questions in that you have from your garden, or if you want to ask some questions about the online course that I'm offering. And also a little bit later in this call, I'm going to be doing just a little drawing. I'm going to give away two mini gardening courses. So make sure to stay on the line. You just might end up going away with a little bit more than you were expecting. And for those of you that have just jumped on, if you have a question, the way to enter that is to press the number 5 and then star on your phone. Press 5 and then star, and it'll jump you into the question line. So let's start taking questions here. We have someone here. What I'll do is I'll unmute your phone, and then we can start talking. So how are you? Welcome to the call.
Well, thank you very much. I had questions about the worm castings. Now, I have one of those, like, 4-bin things that you make the worm castings with, and I have pretty much got that down, but I really don't know what to do with it after I've made it. Do you have, I mean, shouldn't I, there's just not that much of it, and I have a very large garden, so it's like, should I make it into tea, and how do you do that, or should I just spread it out on the soil and just make little patches at a time with it? What are your suggestions I do?
Great question. Did you have something you wanted to share on that, Dad?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, do you use a potting mix or a soil mix for, you know, maybe starting transplants and things like that?
I do. I use a potting mix to start my own seeds. Yes, I do.
Okay. So the worm castings is a very nice addition to that.
Oh. Now, my next kind of a question that goes along with that is, it's always kind of wet. So if I dry it out, is it going to diminish its properties?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm assuming you're not going to dry it out completely. You know, it won't hurt for it to dry out a little bit.
Okay.
If you're using it in the potting mix, you're going to be putting water in that, you know, when you water the plants at least. So.
Okay. Well, that's a great suggestion. I never thought about that because I guess it would give it a real boost in those little six packs, right?
Yes, it would.
Yeah, and a really neat thing about doing that is you end up, you know, that ends up going into your garden as well. You know, your whole little soil block or plug tray or whatever you're using when you transplant it out, it ends up going in your garden as well. So you end up giving the boost to your plant, and then you benefit your garden at the same time.
Yeah. What about the worm tea?
The worm tea?
Yeah. Have you ever made worm tea?
I haven't.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to. I've heard about it and know about it, but I haven't done it myself.
Well, I haven't done it either. The only thing I've ever done was, you know, with the worm, the little box that I'm talking about that you buy, and you can put all your worm, you know, stuff to make the. Then this tea stuff comes out, this liquid stuff.
Uh-huh.
Are you familiar with that at all?
I'm not.
Okay. Yeah. There's a little lever that you can turn on, and then all the worm juice goes down. I have it put it in a bucket, so it's like, well, I don't really know what to do with this either, except for just putting on plants and stuff. But I dilute it down. But I'm just guessing at this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have personal experience with that. So.
Okay. Can I ask one more?
I'm sure it's good for your plants, so I wouldn't throw it out.
Well, do you ever make, like, compost tea with your compost?
We haven't.
Okay.
I have been looking at doing that, but I haven't actually made it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for your questions. Really, really appreciate hearing from you. And
I would like to say that I believe there could be a lot of benefits to compost tea. So I don't want to discourage you from doing that. I think.
Yeah, it's kind of a maintenance. You know, I mean, like not a maintenance. I want to say it's time consuming.
Yeah.
You know, I bought this little bubbler thing, and you put that in there to make the water bubble. I don't know why. I just kind of got online and did this recipe, and I don't know if it really works or not, or if I really need to go to that extent. You know, just anyway.
The bubbler is to aerate it so that you have an aerobic process going on in there.
So you think that's good?
Yeah, and what you're doing is you're breeding microorganisms, and then when you spray that tea on your plants or you water your plants, you're putting those microorganisms into the soil or onto the leaves. Both are good actually for the plants.
Yeah, I don't typically put it on the leaves. I guess I should. I just kind of do like I put it in 5-gallon buckets and just put it on as a like a soil drench. I don't know if that's the word I want to use, but just kind of throw it on the plants, in the soil, and hopefully it does something good.
It should be very good, and it will improve the life of your soil. It will promote both the bacteria as well as the fungi in the soil, and that's what you want. You want to have a very healthy, thriving community of bacteria and fungi in your soil, and that they'll help to feed your plant. They'll help to improve the plant's immune response. They'll do a lot of good things for you.
Well, thank you. That's very encouraging.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. That's great. I'm really glad. That's really neat that you're making your own worm castings. That's really great.
Well, it seems like I have more time than money, so.
Yeah. Don't we all? Actually, or sometimes I don't feel like I have enough time, but.
You're
yeah, good
still
job.
Young. Right.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You know, and, you know, for those of you that have just jumped on, we've talked a bit about composting, making a successful compost pile, and we're just in a question and answer period here. To ask a question, jump in the line here. We've got, you can press the number 5 and then star, 5-star on your phone, and you'll jump in to ask your question. All righty, here we've got a couple more questions. So I'll unmute your phone, and then we'll jump right in. Welcome. Thanks so much for being on the call. Tell us your name.
This is Reggie.
Hi, Reggie.
Hi, how's it going, Paul?
Hey, it's going well. Yeah. What can we talk
good,
about?
Good. Hey. Just listening to your composting presentation here, I had done some mining quant. I'm from the Las Vegas area. And I was just, I had a one of those tumblers that you put, you know, all your material in, and, you know, you want to you turn it every couple of days. That was my small project to work on while I was here in the Las Vegas area, not much growing space in the backyard here. But I'll be transitioning to the country here, prayerfully, in the next month or so. And there's a lot of undeveloped land. Now, I noticed that you said that it usually, compost would be good after a year, you said, I think, something like that?
Yeah, you know, there's kind of a general idea that a 2-year-old compost is just really, really good. Compost that has decomposed for 2 years. Now, people do could decompose it faster than that. You know, you can do things if you, you know, term your compost pile, make sure it's getting good aeration. There's proactive ways to make it decompose faster, so you can definitely get it faster than that.
You can.
Okay, but once it's fully decomposed, I mean, I guess, let's say if you can get your compost down or the area, all your material in there, decomposing in 3 months or so, at that 3-month time, would you then take it and put it on your in your garden area, or would you wait still, I guess is the question.
Can I answer that, Paul?
Yeah.
I don't know if you were in on the first part of the presentation, where I was mentioning that there's a old composting process that doesn't take a high level of management, and then there's a hot composting process that requires a high level of management, basically turning the pile every 2 days. After the fourth day, you begin turning every 2 days. And that'll give you good compost in a short period of time, in about 2 to 3 weeks. You'll have nice compost. But it requires that high level of management. With the cold pile, it'll take you longer. The more you turn it, the faster it'll go. So if you turn it, you know, once a week, you might get it ready in 3 months. But with an unmanaged pile, where you don't turn it at all, or maybe turn it once a year, which is what we often do, you'll want 1 to 2 years for that pile to sit. And the more it has aged, the better it'll be.
Okay, so with the aging of the compost pile, is a compost better in quality if it ages on its own?
Yes. There is something.
Okay, how so?
I'm not really sure, and I'm not sure if anyone else understands exactly what's happening, but it seems that the more it has aged, the more humates it has. You know, humus is what organic matter turns into as it breaks down, and that's what you're looking for in your compost pile, and your humates are what humus is made out of. And I don't know, that it seems that the longer it sits, the more it ages, the better quality humus and humates you have in your pile.
Okay, fair enough.
Oh, I was just going to say, I might throw in just a little side note here with you there, Dad. You were asking about, you know, using it in your garden, and I believe from what I understand, you can, if you're using the compost as like a top dressing, in other words, if you're growing, say, tomato plants, and you want to put compost, like top dress them with compost, that's just putting compost on top of the soil around your tomato plants, I believe you can do that when it's a little bit less decomposed than if you're actually going to be working it into the soil. And some of that is practical in the sense that if you're working in less decomposed soil into a seed bed or something, it's going to make it a little bit more rough. But so there is, you know, there is, you can apply it when it's not to that premium stage if you're going to put it on like a top dressing or something.
Okay, and just one last question. I'm not sure if it was addressed in the beginning of this conference call, but did you guys discuss the possible use of different manures?
No, we didn't.
Yeah, you want to hit on that, Dan?
Okay. Yeah, going back to the carbon-nitrogen ratio, different manures are, you know, any kind of manure is going to be, we classified the basic ingredients of a compost pile as browns and greens. The browns are those things that are high in carbon, and the greens are those things that are high in nitrogen. And any kind of manure is going to be a green. So you'll need to balance that manure with brown ingredients. And you want more brown than green is the basic idea. But then different kinds of manure have different carbon nitrogen ratios. So horse and cow manure are have a higher carbon to nitrogen ratio than chicken manure, for example. So
do you guys happen to use the manure at all?
Do we use manure?
Yeah.
We have on occasion. We're not actually using it right now. And
okay.
You know, we don't totally subscribe to the concept of veganic gardening, in that if we have access to our own manure, we would feel comfortable using it. Manure from feedlots, suspect. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay, I think that's all the questions I have. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Hey, Reggie, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, have a nice
Sorry, I just cut you off there. I think you were saying have a nice day. So maybe I didn't. All right, well, thanks, Reggie. Appreciate that. And for everyone else, just again, if you just jumped in the call here, you can press 5-star to get in the line to ask questions. We're taking questions on your garden or questions about my online gardening course that enrollment is open for now. It's going to be closing down soon this next week. So make sure to jump in there quick at borntogrow.net/enroll. Now here we have another question here. So I'll go ahead and unmute you. Greetings. Welcome to the call. Share with us your name.
I'm John. I'm down in Central Florida.
Hi, John. Great to have you on the call.
I have a question. Do you ever see a use to use a herbicide where you would be planting a garden later? I know you'd have to wait a period of time.
You know, if you don't mind me answering that, Paul.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would be very hesitant to use a herbicide, and of course, this is my bias as an organic farmer. But,
okay.
Basically, my concern with it is that herbicides have been shown to be detrimental to the life in the soil, and they'll set it back. And what you're wanting to do is you're wanting to encourage the life in your soil, because that life is what gives life to your plants. They make the nutrients available to your plants, and they make they improve the soil structure. You know, whatever, they're critical and key. And herbicides, I mean, glyphosate, which is the key ingredient in Roundup in particular, has been shown to be very detrimental to the life in the soil.
Well, see, I you know, totally opposed to Roundup, of course, like everybody else. But the reason I brought this question up, I mean, I've been gone all summer and came home, and I've been gone summers before, and I've never seen so many weeds in my life. I understand we had about 5 foot of rain down here over a period of 4 months.
Yeah.
And it's a jungle out there.
Yeah.
And it's very tempting to go out there and spray it down.
Right. There are some organic herbicides. They're not going to be quite as effective, but they will burn your weeds. There's one called Burnout that we have used on a very limited basis.
Well, I used to just go in there with a tiller and till it all up, but I started doing some raised beds. Now I got all these wooden boxes out there, and I can't get in there with my 5 foot wide tiller anymore.
Oh yeah, that is a problem.
And, Well, I've got a little 9x14 greenhouse. I've only been back in Florida for 2.5 weeks, and I've got beans up in there, and I've got kale coming up and radishes. And so
nice.
We are going to garden in there, and I am enrolled in your course.
Oh, that's great, yeah. Glad to have you, John. Yeah, appreciate you sharing about your garden. That's really neat. I love what you're doing. So you've got quite the little greenhouse going there, it sounds like.
Right. I'm doing, well, I put the beans directly in a raised bed inside the greenhouse, and the radishes and some onions and such. But I'm starting kale and collards and, I don't think collards, kale and, what all do I have started? I've got a couple of different varieties of tomatoes. Some bell peppers. I got a whole bunch of little starts going. You can do a fair amount in a little greenhouse that size. I have I have 10 raised beds in there.
That's great. Each
one of them's about 5 feet long and 2.5 feet or so wide. And
yeah.
An interesting thing was, I mean, we had a good crop of tomatoes last year, and I came home, and here was this one volunteer tomato living in that hot greenhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And I have blossoms on the thing. I couldn't believe the thing. It's like,
oh, wow.
I got one start anyway. I'll get off and let somebody else come in. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, well, hey, thanks. Yeah, thanks for sharing. And, you know, being a part of the course, feel free to shoot me a note anytime you've got a question. Shoot me an email or send me, send me some pictures of what you're doing. I'd love to see it. Thanks so much, John.
Okay.
And for everyone else, if you want to get your question in, go ahead and press number five, and then star on your phone, and we'll get you in the question roll here. Otherwise, you know, why don't we go ahead and do this little mini 7 Secrets of Organic Gardening giveaway. I'm just going to pick a couple random people here from the callers, and I decided that it would be fun to give away a couple of these little mini garden courses. And what it is it's a seminar that my Uncle John Dysinger did. He actually started the farm. You know, I work with my family, my dad Edwin, and my Uncle John are partners on Bountiful Blessings Farm. And he actually started the farm back in 1998 and has been doing this for quite a while. And so this mini course, it's a little online mini course with downloadable worksheets for each section. You can download a worksheet. It's got space provided to take notes. And, of course, takes you on a quick journey through making your garden beds, transplanting, cultivating, dealing with pests, building a healthy soil. It goes into composting, some of what we've been sharing here as well, and even more. And it also really encourages you to make gardening a lifestyle rather than just an event in our lives, because sometimes it can be easier for us to have this mentality that, you know, I plant my garden in the spring and harvest something in the summer, and then, you know, that's the end. Whereas the reality is we can be harvesting and we can be eating out of our garden all year long. There's people that are doing this in as cold environments as Maine and Washington. If you were in some of the pre-launch training videos that I was seeing, you saw some of that. And so make it a lifestyle. Make it something that is simply a part of your life, that you just, you know, spend a little bit of time each day, each week, putting something in your garden, harvesting fresh food out of your garden. So I want to give away a couple of these courses. And what I'll do is I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. All right, friend, share with us your name. You are one of the winners of Born to Grow's little 7 Secrets of Organic Gardening mini course. Hello, are you there? For some reason, you're not coming through. You should have heard something about your phone being unmuted or something. It looks like you're talking. It looks like there's sound coming through, but I'm not quite hearing you. Tell you what, I've got your number here that you called from, and I can try calling you back. Unless it's something, I'll try. Let me try something here. Sorry, we must be having a little technical difficulties. Sorry for that, everyone. All right, well, let's try our second person here. And I tell you what, if we can't get you live on the call here, then I'll go ahead and mark down your numbers here, and I'll give you a personal call myself and welcome you into the mini garden course. All right, here's our second winner. I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. Welcome.
Hello.
Share with us your name. Hello.
This is Alicia.
Hi, Alicia. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. That's
absolutely
wonderful. I'm glad to be the recipient of that.
Absolutely. Glad to give it to you. So I'll tell you what, to claim it and to jump into the course, is the phone number that you called in here one that I could call you back on?
Yes, it is.
Perfect. So I'll tell you what, I'll simply call you back on that after we get off of the course here, and I'll share with you how you can jump in on that course. It's a really neat little course, and it actually even goes into, you know, there's a extra question and answer session at the end that you can gain some more insights from, and shares a little bit about, I believe, a summer that some of us, younger generation, a couple of my cousins, my sister and I did a summer garden. So really neat little course there.
Okay, I look forward to it.
All right, thanks so much, Alicia.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, thanks, everyone else. And if there's anyone else that wants to jump in quick here before we wrap this call up, go ahead and press the number 5 and then star. You can ask any question about gardening or about my online organic gardening university course. I think that we all have this picture, or as gardeners, it seems like we should all have this picture of the beautiful, ideal veggies that are coming out. It's kind of like that little introductory video that I did where, you know, you step out your door on a brisk winter day and you pull back a cover and you just feel that, you know, that aroma of spring coming back out of you with the crisp lettuce and spinach and carrots that literally taste so much better. I mean, they're sweet, really sweet, sweet like candy carrots. The story of a friend of ours, I shared it in one of the videos, but in case you didn't catch watch it, real quick, a friend of ours who was actually a customer of Bountiful Blessings Farm, her son goes to school, and at school, you know, the kids come around and have a little bartering system with their lunch boxes. And so, you know, who knows, Sally trades her sandwich with Jim for his potato chips or something. And, you know, guess what was at the top of the list was none other than these winter carrots from Bountiful Blessings Farm. Because when we work with the systems that God has created in nature to build up a healthy soil and to provide the best environment that we can for our plants, the results are absolutely incredible. It's actually growing the food the way that it was meant to be grown, and the taste quality is incredibly higher. But not only that, you know, there's so many pluses to it. I was just thinking about and sharing earlier today about how, you know, some people talk about the 8 natural remedies or 8 natural things that are good for our health, and it's kind of been an acronym, New Start, you know, where you have the nutrition and exercise and water and sunshine and temperance and fresh air, rest and trust in God, all of these things. And the amazing thing is in the agricultural environment, when you're out in the garden, I don't know if there's any other occupation or any other activity that you can do that incorporates all of those things into one, boiled down into one, to one area. It's amazing because you get, you know, you're out there and you get your fresh air. Because you're exercising, you want to drink more water, and you end up resting better at the end of the day, and you're getting your fresh air, like I said, and your sunshine, and ultimately, when it comes down to it, we have to trust the Lord that the seeds are going to sprout, because there's nothing we can do to make them sprout. We can only sow the seeds and allow them to sprout. And so, you know, calls like this, I just want to share with you more how you can do this for yourself. And if you're interested in digging deeper, the offer is there right now. Incredibly special deal, kind of an introductory and holiday offer on my online Organic Gardening University course, where you can jump in and get a lifetime pass on the whole thing, where literally you get everything now and for the rest of your life, all the updates, every new video content, piece of content, and plus I'm also putting in these couple bonuses, the 7 Secrets of Organic Gardening mini course that I was giving away this evening, and I'm looking at doing a little mini urban garden course that when that is created, I'll be giving anyone who jumps in the course now, because I noticed I've found that a lot of people, they just have the space to grow. And so I want to kind of address that bit. You know, I think that everybody should move to the country. That's just my personal fear. There's such a better lifestyle environment, but I don't want that to keep you from starting where you are, because, you know, you can't just move to the country overnight. And so I'm going to be putting that together. That's in the plans. So to enroll before this closes down, it's going to be closing down this next week. Just go to borntogrow.net/enroll. And I would love to have you join me. It looks like we've got someone here that has another question. Welcome. Well, I'm sorry. Okay. I think I just muted your phone. Here, I'm going to unmute it. Welcome. Share your name with us again.
Sure. This is Alicia. I do have a question now.
It is Alicia. Okay, good. Yeah.
Yes. We're also anticipating a move to the country, but we're kind of in between. We have about an acre right now, mostly fruit trees, but quite a bit of garden space. But our problem is gophers. Solution for gophers.
Good question. Gophers can be a real menace. You know, the first thing I have on my list, which not everybody necessarily may like to be the first thing, is I think one of your best bets is to get a dog that would be able to go after them. Okay, so I know that's not necessarily always practical, because you might not want to be getting a dog right now, or you might already have one and you don't want another one, but honestly, it can be huge. Otherwise, yeah, were you going to say something?
No, I'm just going to say, what's the next option?
yeah, the next option. You can definitely trap them, although that can be pretty intense and you need a lot of traps to be able to really get them effectively, or so I've heard. You know, I don't personally have experience with fighting off gophers, just simply because we don't have that problem, which, you know, it's a blessing to us, but there's a lot of people that do, like yourself. And trapping, I have heard that you can do it, but it is intensive. You have to have a lot of traps to be able to do it, like I said, and you might need to research a little bit into how you set those traps up in the gopher holes. Do you have anything you want to add on to that with dealing with gophers?
No, we've tried just about everything.
Yeah, I really
And we
don't.
Have so much land and with empty land around us, so that they just keep coming back.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's gopher bombs, and I haven't, since we've started farming here, I haven't really, our problem is voles, and our voles aren't a serious problem, so we really don't do much about them.
Okay. All right.
Sorry about that, Alicia. I wish we had a better answer for you there.
All right. Thanks.
You are welcome, and thanks for the question. Alrighty, here. Another question here. Welcome to the call. Share with us your name.
Oh, this is John again. I tell you what I'm doing for gophers.
Okay.
Hey, John. Oh, good. Good deal.
I'm in Idaho during the summer and just starting up there, actually. And we have a big gopher problem on our property, and I'm using 12-inch tuba 12s for raised beds, and I'm putting hardware cloth underneath to keep the gophers out.
Okay.
Mm. Good deal. And, you know, I've heard of, I think I've heard of people also doing a similar thing. Alicia, you could take note. And actually, it came into my mind. I just didn't share it earlier. Was basically a similar thing with you there, John, except they were using, like, a chicken wire underneath. Something.
Well, those gophers up there are pretty small. They're
oh, really? Okay.
Gophers. They're not like the gophers you see out in Montana out there where you see them popping up out of the ground, you know, and all these tunnels and all these. These are more sort of like moles, but they're called pocket gophers.
Hmm.
And you got to get down to the hardware cloth size to keep them out.
Hmm.
All right. Here, it looks like Alicia is – let's get Alicia back on here. I believe this is Alicia. Is that you, Alicia?
Yes, it is. Thank you for the suggestion for the hardware cloth. And, yes, these just seem to pop up out of the ground.
the ones we deal with are only out at night. You don't see them during the daytime at all. They just push up a little, and they push the dirt up, and the hole is actually covered. It's not an open hole. And I understand the trap them. You got to take a probe and go around the hole and find the hollow spot and then dig down and either put a bait in there or put a trap in there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I haven't tried the garden working and see them pushing it up. You can turn around and they pushed up a hole.
Oh, no.
You got a big problem.
So sorry about that, Alicia. That sounds.
Okay, the raised cloth, that's another option, too. All right.
Yeah.
The raised beds with the hardware cloth. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, try that out. And do me a favor. Do me a favor, Alicia, and let me know how it goes if you try that out. It sounds like it's working for you, John.
Well, I've got my raised beds built. I don't have the hardware cloth on them, and I haven't put anything in them yet. That's the first project when we get back to Idaho in the spring. But for your dad, I did buy a truckload of composted cow manure that's 7 years old. And I don't know whether it's from a dairy or a feedlot or where from. I inquired about buying some topsoil, and the fellow I talked to said it was hard to get around there. But he says, I have a source of this compost, and I guess they cycle it every 7 years. And it's got some gravel in it and some sand in it, and it's got some sawdust in it. And I did send it into the laboratory that Dave Westbrook recommends and had it analyzed. And, man, it is rich stuff.
Wow.
All of the things came out very high, very high, very high. And I have the soil there in the yard where I'm going to have my garden tested, and it turned out overall pretty good. Of course, it's pretty heavy in clay up there.
Yeah.
I need some Florida sand up there.
You're right.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a good compost supply.
I would think if there were some antibiotics in that after 7 years, they'd be pretty dead by then.
Yeah. Organic processes do break down. They break down. Even most synthetic chemicals will eventually break down through organic processes over time, and that's nature's way of writing things. So I would think you're pretty safe with a 7-year-old.
Yeah. Well, I'm real anxious for April to roll around and get back up there, but I think we're snowbirds right now. I've lived in Florida for 50 years. I've seen snow here twice, and it was almost enough to cover the ground.
Yeah.
Okay, and I just heard from a friend up there that goes to the Newport Church where we go in Newport, Washington, and they this last week they let me know they got their first snow.
Oh wow!
I'll let somebody else come in again. Thank
all
you.
All right, thanks, John. Appreciate it. All right, you know we've got this one other winner of the mini garden course. I'm going to try and unmute your phone again and see if we can get this going. Let's see here. Welcome to the call. Share with us your name.
Hello.
All right, it's coming through a little better. Just breaking up a little bit.
Yep. Thank you.
You are welcome. Is this a good phone number that I could call you back on?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, I'll do that as soon as we get off the phone here. I'll give you all a call and we'll get you all set up for that. So appreciate everyone getting on the call here. This last chance, if you want to get your question in, press 5-star on your phone, 5-star, and we'll get your question in here. Otherwise, we'll wrap this up. You know, I think that we have such a huge opportunity right now in this whole gardening realm, the gardening world. The interest in local, fresh organics is just rising at huge rates, almost even exponentially across our nation. And so it's a huge opportunity to make a difference in our world and show how we can grow beautiful food using the systems that God has created in nature. All right, we've got a question here. I think this might be Alicia. Welcome to the call again. For some reason it wasn't unmuting.
Well, it
hey
is,
there,
Alicia, but I didn't have another question. I must have hit 5-star by mistake.
Okay. All right, no problem there. Thanks so much. All right, we've got someone else, though. So, welcome to the call. Share with us your
name. Yes, Sharon. I want to know how to start I got my soil. What do I put? What kind of compost or what kind of, things that I add to the soil to make it, to have it enough potassium and all those nutrients needed by the plant.
Yeah, do you want to touch on that real quick, John?
So you're ready to make a garden?
Yes. Oh, it's going to be on pots because I don't have enough place to grow.
You said it's going to be in pots?
Right.
Okay. So what are you going to use to start making your soil? Are you going to buy a potting mix or are you going to do something from scratch?
Oh, that's what I want. A potting mix. Which kind do I buy?
Oh, it's hard to say because there are different brands available locally in different places. We make a potting mix ourselves.
Uh-huh.
I could give you a recipe for it.
Okay.
We use peat moss.
is moss.
Yes. And compost.
It is compost.
And perlite.
Fertilizer.
Perlite is a, you know, when you buy a potting mix, you'll see these little white pieces in the soil. Those are either perlite or vermiculite.
Okay.
And they help to just keep moisture in the soil and help to aerate the soil. So those are the basic ingredients. And then, and we will use 3 parts of compost.
Okay.
And 3 parts of peat moss.
Okay.
And 1 part perlite.
Okay.
And mix those together.
Okay.
And then, so that will provide the basic soil.
Okay.
Then you'll need to add some basic nutrients.
Uh-huh.
And you can, what we use are green sand and soft rock phosphate.
Green sand?
Yes.
And salt phosphate? Okay.
Soft rock phosphate. And then,
okay.
Then you'll need a nitrogen source.
Need a what?
A nitrogen source.
Nitrogen, okay.
Yes. And we've been struggling with the nitrogen source. The best, the easiest and best one is blood meal.
Spell it for me, please.
It's blood meal. It's dried blood.
Okay, blood meal. Okay.
Yes. You can buy it at a hardware store. We're trying to get away from that because we don't like the idea of using blood, but it's hard to find a substitute material.
Uh-huh.
We finally found one, but they only sell it in bulk containers. Not even in 50-pound bags. It's in large shipments. So
you
can use alfalfa, but it won't work as well as blood meal. So anyways, if you're going to use those 3 things, you make a mix of them. Do you know what green sand is? Do you know how to find it?
No.
Green sand is a natural sand that's high in potassium, so we use that as our potassium source. And I think you could probably substitute dried kelp for it.
Kelp. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's seaweed, dried seaweed. I'm not that might be more available to you than green sand. Anyways, you can use 1 part of green sand or kelp,
uh-huh.
1 part of soft rock phosphate.
Uh-huh.
And
what is it? What is the first word before phosphate?
It's soft rock phosphate. It's SOFT.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, soft rock phosphate.
Okay. Thank you.
And then 1 part of blood meal.
Okay.
And you mix those together, and when we make our mix, we use, when I said for the compost and the peat moss and the perlite, we will use a 2-gallon container to measure our parts. So we're making a fairly large amount.
Uh-huh.
So we'll have 6 gallons of peat moss, 6 gallons of compost, and 1 gallon of perlite, using a 2-gallon bucket to measure those things.
Okay.
And then for the nutrients, we'll use a 1 pint. If you've mixed those other nutrients together, we'll use a 1 pint jar to add to the other mix. And that's the mix we use. That's our potting soil mix.
You said you make 6 gallons of green sand, sodium. Oh, no,
not 6 gallons. So you can use a pint jar,
uh-huh,
and just take one pint of green sand and 1 pint of blood meal and 1 pint of soft rock phosphate and mix them together.
Okay.
And then use that, just put in 1 pint jar full of the mix into,
uh-huh,
into your potting soil.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very, very much.
All right, thank you. Thank you for your question. All right, we've got one more question here this evening. Welcome to the call. Glad to have you on. Share with us your name. Hello, are you there? Hello? No, maybe not. I thought we had someone on here. Let's see if we can get it to work. Hello, welcome to the call.
Hello.
Hi. Share with us your name.
Julia.
Hi, Julia. Did you have a question?
No, I wanted to comment on the gophers and the moles.
Oh, do.
You suggested a dog. I would not suggest a dog. We had a dog.
Okay.
And the dog just digs the hole trying to dig up the gophers because it hears them underground.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to have a bunch of holes in your yard, not only from the gophers and moles, but from the dog.
From the dog as well.
Yes.
So there you go, some practical experience.
Yes, and the one thing that we did, they have these things you can buy at the hardware store. They make a sound, and you put them in the ground, and it keeps them away. It doesn't kill them, but it keeps them away. It sends them somewhere else.
Okay, and so it's like weatherproof or something?
Pardon me?
Julie, I was just going to ask, have you tried those? I've seen them, but I've never tried them.
Yes, we used them on our land in East Texas, and now we're in West Texas. But, yes, we use them, and the sound keeps them away.
Okay, so it's been pretty effective for you.
Yes.
Good. Thanks so much for jumping in and sharing that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you know, it is true that dogs can be a bit of trouble as well. You know, we have a dog that is a super good hunter and has been a real blessing to us in keeping stuff out of our garden. But we do, you know, we will at times come in and find a part of our garden. What we have a problem with is armadillos. Armadillos have been moving into our area, kind of a menace and a pest, and so we'll come in and find a section in our garden that has just been completely torn up by the dog and, you know, a dead armadillo there. And so, you know, it's kind of like a give and lose there because they got rid of the armadillo, but, you know, we lost a little bit on the garden as well.
Yeah.
So I can see what you're saying and how it could be even worse of a problem if there's that many more.
Mm-hmm.
You have a huge huge problem with the gophers. So thanks for sharing that. Really
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It. Okay, thanks everyone for jumping on the call here. And just a quick reminder as we close out here to jump on over and grab this special deal from my online gardening university. Like I said earlier, we'll be closing out registration this next week. So time's winding down, clock's ticking down. And would love to have you jump in and be a part of it and love to hear from you. And thanks again, and thanks to my dad. Thanks, Dad, for joining me on the call here. Really appreciate your input as well. And go put some of this to practice. You know, just as a final little note to everyone, I would encourage you to take some of these thoughts that we've been going over on the composting and what we've been talking about. Go put it to practice in your garden and shoot me an email with a picture of what you're doing, or if you have a question, shoot me a note. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, thanks, everyone. Really appreciate it, and we'll wrap it up for this time. You have a wonderful evening. God bless.